Hey, everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Hip News Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. How's everyone doing?
I'm good. Okay. How are you doing?
Doing good.
The Mets are actually, taking care of business.
It's nice when they score runs, and it's nice when Taiwan Walker doesn't allow runs.
Total aside, every time I hear that expression, the only thing I can think of are those terrible Office Depot commercials from like 15 years ago. I don't know if anyone knows what I'm talking about here. No one?
Not ringing a bell.
No? All right. Well, that's fine. It's like some really bad like commercials for paper and pens and shit. It might just be one of those memories I totally made up.
I'll have to do some research into it because I like watching commercials on YouTube. Some of them are like, old commercials. It's kind of funny sometimes.
Let me see if I can find it for you.
Well, while you're looking for that, in the meantime, back in 1984, we'll start with Permanent Extent Trade, Doc Gooden set the MLB record for most strikeouts in a season by a rookie. He struck out 276 batters, and that beat Herb Scores. Previous record, which was 246, which he set in 1954. So Gooden is from Tampa. He went to Hillsborough High School, and Hillsborough High School, along with another school that's a couple of miles away, Plant High School, those are like baseball powerhouses. Tampa is a hotbed of baseball activity. So what Tampa baseball legends are we going to promote, extend, or trade? First, we have Wade Boggs. Next is Gary Sheffield, and last is Steve Garvey.
That's a tough one.
My immediate thought was to trade Garvey, but he's a lot better than I gave him credit for.
Yeah, my instinct there was to say Boggs, Sheffield, Garvey, but I'd have to look up Garvey because I don't know what his stats are off the top of my head.
A career 294, 329, 446 hitter, 117 OPS plus over 19 years, one MVP award, 10 All-Stars, 4 Gold Gloves.
Yeah. He's a first baseman with a career 116 weighted.
I'm probably still trading him.
Yeah, Boggs is an Inner Circle Hall of Famer, and Gary Sheffield should be a Hall of Famer, if not for the steroid stuff. So, Inner Circle might be a little strong for Boggs, but Wade Boggs is real good. Yeah, Gary Sheffield had a 141 weighted for his career.
Did he? Wow. Okay, that's a little...
Gary Sheffield, so he gets promoted.
292, 393, 514. That's a 141 weighted, 509 homers, 62 WAR.
So I figured it would have kind of gotten diminished in the era that he played and everyone else, putting up similar, obviously not similar, but high octane offense numbers.
In 1992, he had a 172 weighted, 176 in 95, 185 in 96. 173 in 2000, 163 in 2003. The dude just fucking mashed everywhere.
Yeah, he was good for the Mets too, right? Like that one half.
122, yeah.
I saw his, I guess it was his 500th home run. And
they tucked it just inside the left field foul pole.
Yep. Core baseball memory.
Yeah. I mean, that was the 2009 Mets. I do my best to think about as little as possible.
Was that starting first baseman Mike Jacobs? Or was that 2010?
All reference. I mean, their opening day lineup in 2009 is horrific.
Yeah, just a real bad.
Although I think actually Carlos Delgado was still on the team, but he got injured and it was out for the entire season. So that might have been Jacobs in 2010.
2009 opening day lineup. Oh, wait, no, their opening day lineup is decent here. And then fell apart.
A lot of guys got hurt. Yeah.
Schneider, Delgado, Castillo, Wright, Reyes, Daniel Murphy in left. Oh, this was the game where Murph dropped that ball in left field against Miami.
In Miami, yeah. Burned in my brain.
Yep. In their old stadium with that horrible, ugly left field wall. Beltran Church in Santana. No, I'm thinking of the 2010 starting lineup, which was Rod Barajas, Mike Jacobs, Castillo Wright, not Joey Cora, the other one, Alex Cora, Jesus, Jason Bay, Gary Matthews Jr., and Jeff Francoeur.
Gary Matthews Jr.
Oh, no. Zero
recollection of Gary Matthews Jr. as a Met.
Oh,
well, you're lucky.
Zero recollection.
Not missing much.
No.
What a lineup.
Well, things got progressively better, I guess, from that point on.
2011.
I mean, it's kind of hard to get worse.
Oh, 2011, pretty bad. Josh Tolley, Ike Davis, Brad Emaus, who we all thought was going to be good. Wright Reyes. Harris? I don't even know which Harris this is. Willie Harris. Angel Pagan, Carlos Beltran, an opening day starter. Anyone? Bueller?
Mike Pelfrey,
yes.
Good call.
Well, I will say that roster is better than the 2010 roster.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of bad teams, let's start off with the Syracuse Mets. And they are a bad team. They play the Rochester Red Wings in a battle for upstate New York supremacy, and they split the series 3-3. So the title of King of New York, King of Upstate New York, is still up for grabs. With the 3 wins and the 3 losses, that brings Syracuse's record to 56-79 on the season. So they are ahead of the Charlotte Knights by a few games. Charlotte is 53-81, so they are not completely in the cellar, but there still is basically a month to go, so a lot could happen. Next up are the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, and they played the Portland Sea Dogs, and it went basically as you would expect when a first place team takes on a last place team, unless it's the Mets and the Marlins.
I was going to say.
Yeah, and Binghamton dropped 5 of the 6 games, so they are now 23-38 in the second half. But they are not in dead last. They are a game and a half in front of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats for last place. So they have another week. Hopefully they stay out of the cellar as well. Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Winston-Salem Dash. And they continued their hot streak. They went 4-2 against the Dash. So that brings their second half record to 40-26. And with their win on Friday, the Cyclones clinched the South Atlantic League's North Division for the second half. The regular season, it ends today as we're recording. They will start the playoffs this upcoming Tuesday. They're going to be playing the Aberdeen Ironbirds, who won the Northern Division in the first half. And the Cyclones won the New York Penn League Championship in 2019, which is the last year that the New York Penn League existed. And they're in the South Atlantic League now. So the Cyclones have the potential to be one of the few teams out there to win championships in 2 completely separate leagues. I wasn't really looking that long, but I couldn't find any data regarding teams that have done that before. I know at the major league level, no one has done that. You know, it's only a couple of teams that have switched from National League to American League, vice versa. And no one has a championship in both league. And at the minor league level, I'm sure that there were teams. I'm sure there's a bunch of teams because, you know, especially back in the day, you know, the pre-modern era, you're talking 10s, the 20s, the 30s, 40s, rules were very willy-nilly in the minor leagues, and there's a whole bunch of, you know, movement and things are a lot less formal. But one team that I did find that did do this, that they won championships in 2 separate leagues, are the defending South Atlantic League champions right now, the Bowling Green Hot Rods. They won the South Atlantic League Championship last season, and they also won the championship in 2018 when they were part of the Midwest League. So there's a couple, and obviously if the Cyclones do win the championship, then we'll have to look into it more. But hopefully they do. And last and not least, St. Lucie Mets. They play the Fort Myer Mighty Muscles. I keep calling them the Miracle, but they are the Fort Myer Mighty Muscles.
Are they the? I assume they're like the shellfish, right? Not.
Muscles. They are the shell. They are the shellfish, but the shellfish has a very hefty bicep.
See, that's fine. Yeah. That's cool.
He's a big boy.
Yeah, that's if they were just like, no, we're the muscles. We're a bunch of jack. Like that'd be stupid. But if Jack Shellfish, I can get behind that as a mascot.
So basically, rain just basically ruined this entire series. Four games got postponed or just outright canceled due to rain and when weather conditions. St. Lucie ended up going 2-3. And if it wasn't for their phenomenal first half, this would have been the end of the season. But they won the first half, so they're going to be playing the Palm Beach Cardinals in the finals this upcoming week. St. Lucie is 8-15 against the Palm Beach Cardinals this year, and most of those wins actually came in the first half. So we'll see. Not looking too great for St. Lucie. They haven't been bad necessarily in the second half. They are 33-30. That's above 500, and that is good for second place. But, you know, even when you count the 2022 draftees that are on the roster now, I don't think that this team is as good as it was in the first half. When they went 40-25 and they had guys like Alex Ramirez, Stanley Consuegra, all those pitchers, you know, that were drafted in 2021 that are now in Brooklyn. So we'll see. But, you know, here's hoping for a St. Lucie championship.
I mean, it feels like their offense is pretty weak now. Like, Ramirez, every time he did a farm report, it felt like Ramirez had two or three hits in the first half.
Yeah.
And who knows how much they're going to push the college guys here. And to be clear, they should not be pushing the college guys for the sake of a minor league championship. But
hey, it's three games.
Yes.
Ride them.
The same Met fan has now caught two home run balls, it seems. Huh. Excellent.
That's pretty impressive.
It is not Zach, whatever his name is, so no need to get angry.
Who hit the latest home run? Was it Mark Vientos by any chance?
No, it is not.
Ah, okay. Well,
Eduardo Escobar has homered.
Biggest news relevant to minor leagues baseball and the Mets is obviously Starlin Marte being put on the disabled list and the Mets calling up Mark Vientos to take his place on the roster. We talked about him getting a call up last week. He played a couple more games in Syracuse, and all in all, he is now running a 280, 358, 519 line at Syracuse with 24 homers, 44 walks, and 122 strikeouts in 101 games.
He just looked very bad against 88-mile-an-hour garbage, so.
Nice. Well, yeah, I mean, people need to have realistic expectations here, and he's not going to be a savior. He's not going to be a guy that's going to, you know, rally this team into going undefeated for the rest of the season. You know, the odds of him doing what some of those Braves rookies have been doing are very slim. You know, I don't know the role that he's going to have. I don't know how many at bats he's going to get in total. He does improve the team though, you know, from an offensive perspective anyway. Like we were talking about last week, Devin Marrero is basically like a black hole at the bat. And he's on the roster for the time being for, I guess, another couple of days until Guillerme is back. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Vientos, you could bust him up and in with good velocity. He's not going to catch up. You can throw him some garbage and he's going to probably chase. But he has big time power and stuff that he can catch up to, stuff that he does recognize and put good wood on. He could hit very far. And, you know, whether or not he goes over 30 or whether or not Darren Ruff goes over 30, you know, but I have more faith, I guess, in Vientos maybe doing good right now than Ruff, because Ruff has just looked rough. I'm sorry for that pun, but.
Breaking news, Tomas Nito has hit his first home run of the year and is now being ghosted in the clubhouse, in the dugout. He was not a cheapie. He hit that out to dead center.
He's having quite a game today.
Yes. Vientos is presumably final line unless something fucking disastrous happens here in the ninth. 0-5, 2 strikeouts, a pop out, and 2 flyouts.
All right. You know, that's part of the course, I guess. Not everyone is going to be a Brett Beatty and hit a home run in your first at bat.
The Iowa Lottery was out there saying on a regular basis, hey, folks, check your ticket. Somebody's got $16 million. And it was sort of this mystery. Why hasn't anyone come forward?
I'm Phoebe Judge, host of the podcast Criminal. True stories about people who've done wrong, been wronged, or gotten caught somewhere in the middle, told by people who know them best. Like a man who successfully figured out how to negotiate with his father's kidnappers after some trial and error.
They were just like, for that price, we won't even tell you where he's buried.
And a 12-year-old who solved a family mystery.
There were three little fingerprints. And I remember in junior DA camp, I was like, oh, fingerprints. This is definitely some evidence. Then we can find whoever broke into my grandmother's house.
Discover the unexpected side of true crime.
There were no security alarms whatsoever. The file cabinets were not even locked. So that gave us enough information to plan the actual break-in.
Listen to Criminal now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Sam Sanders, and I host a show called Into It. It is a weekly show where we obsess about the culture that matters. Like revisiting the day when Beyoncé dropped her self-titled album in 2013 by surprise.
And then we come out, and the world is totally alight in a different way because this album has dropped.
And viewing Beyoncé, not just as a musician, but as a business executive.
People talk about Ford, they talk about Nike, they talk about Coke and Pepsi, and they should talk about Beyoncé.
Or we'll deep dive into why the internet loves A24 movies. Can you recall Swiss Army Man?
Played by Harry Potter.
Yes, played by Harry Potter. And they realized that in the era of the internet, a movie about a farting corpse sells itself.
Into It from Vulture. New episodes every Thursday. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. So shifting gears now to minor league baseball as a whole, rather than just the Mets. This week is actually a pretty historic week for the sport. About 2 weeks or so, the end of August, the MLB Players Association sent a questionnaire to minor league baseball players, basically asking if they'd be interested in unionizing. 50% of the responses that the union got back were favorable towards joining the union. Really more than 50%. One source said is a significant majority. So the table was set, and basically things could have gone two ways. One, the more direct and easy route, with Major League Baseball just recognizing, you know, the efforts and recognizing that, okay, there will be a minor league union. Or the other, a little bit more messy, with them not recognizing it, and then the issue being brought to the National Labor Relations Board for litigation and back and forth and whatever. But Major League Baseball voluntarily recognized their unionization efforts, so that's like the biggest hurdle has been cleared basically at this point. So minor league players will have some sort of union, you know, underneath the umbrella of the MLBPA. It'll be a separate bargaining unit and separate, I don't want to say separate union, but separate, what's a good word for it? It'll be separate from major league players because obviously, you know,
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, there are different, everyone has different interests and are looking for different things, minor league player and major league player that's already made it. So two separate groups, but they're both falling underneath the umbrella of the MLBPA.
Frankly, a lot of the MLB players kind of have crummy opinions on this sort of stuff, it seems, that kind of reared its head with the international draft conversation over the offseason. Some of the, I know Tatis was one of them, and I forget some of the other names were like, no, we don't want this because look at how much money we made and that wouldn't have happened. So, yeah, it's definitely good that they're separating this.
Well, you bring up international players. They will not fall under the purview of this because...
Yes, perhaps it's a bad example, but I think the
agreed with the sentiment. But yes, just as a, I guess it is something to bring up that since those players are playing in the Dominican Republic, you know, a whole other country, they will not be falling under the umbrella of the union because different, literally, different country, different laws. But yeah, obviously the biggest thing that this is going to impact is salary, because players who are not on the 40-man roster, salaries range anywhere from like $400 a week to, you know, at the lowest levels to about $700 a week at AAA. And that means that their take-home salaries for the year are well below federal poverty line. And, you know, guys can't meet their basic housing needs, their food, whatever else, without supplementing their income somehow, either another job or someone else contributing. So that will definitely get addressed.
Yeah, it's just better across the board for the league. It'll be better for the game itself, if you want to talk about something that matters the least important here. Like, just the players will be better if they are in better, if they have better quality of life and all that. And yeah. It's better for the individual player. Like, that's what really matters here. Even the career AAA guy, the Terrence Gores of the world, you know?
He pitched the other day. Logan Verrett was pitching for Rochester against Syracuse on Saturday. And I was just like, wow, Logan Verrett is still around. He's 32 or 33, I forget.
32.
He retired for a bit.
Yeah, pitching in minor league baseball. And he's not the only guy out there, you know, of that vein.
He should be able to make a living if he wants to go pitch in Syracuse or whatever. I think he's in Washington system, whatever their AAA equivalent is. I can't remember off the top of my head.
His case is, I guess, a little different because he was on the 40-man roster and he did pitch in the major leagues, unless I'm hallucinating.
No, yes. He definitely did.
Logan Verrett did indeed make starts for the Mets.
Okay.
He probably has all the time, all the pension and all that stuff too. He was probably there long enough.
But he is not the only guy that is 32 and is still plugging away in the minor leagues, you know?
No, of course.
And like, we'll never know, because this is one of those, you know, shadowy numbers that you can't actually get. But how many guys do you think are out there that could have been contributors in some way to a Major League Baseball team, maybe could have even been superstars, that they just couldn't deal with all the shit that was thrown their way? They just couldn't deal with not having such a minimal income to support themselves or their family, or, you know, just all these other issues that minor league players run into. I mean, teams have basically, hey, we've discussed this before, but teams have basically been shooting themselves in the foot for years and years and years and years just because they can save themselves a couple of million dollars, which is nickels and dimes to them.
Yeah.
I mean, what was, I know we've done the math. It was like the amount of money, if they got one marginal reliever.
Reliever or something. Right, like, yeah. It's pathetic.
So you get one extra marginal middle reliever per year, and that basically pays for itself.
Yep.
Now, here's my worry, because I'm a very pessimistic person and a very paranoid person. Major League Baseball just voluntarily is just like, okay, cool. You know, they chose the path of least resistance, but that does not mean that they are going to be magnanimous. You know, there's a lot of shenanigans that Major League Baseball could pull before all this goes through. It's going to take some time, you know, for this to happen. It's not going to happen overnight. There's going to be a lot of logistical stuff that needs to happen and needs to be taken care of and figured out.
And we saw how the lockout went. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously the players are protected and that's a good thing, but also that was very ugly from the MLB, from Major League Baseball. And the players sometimes did some ugly stuff too, but I'm going to support them more than I'm going to support the corporation. That's just how it is. But Major League Baseball was definitely acting in bad faith a lot of the time. And they're going to do that with the minor leaguers too, but I would just rather them be protected, obviously. Well, this is a way better outcome than them than the minor leaguers just kind of living their lives.
Absolutely. And like, I was like, what shit is Major League Baseball going to pull before they get unionized? Because this is happening now and nobody can stop it. Like, you know, we saw what they did a couple of years ago. They just arbitrarily cut hundreds of players. They cut entire teams. They cut entire leagues. You know, are players who are in the DSL complexes or players that are in the Florida or the Arizona complexes, you know, are they at risk here now? You know, the teams could basically just say, like, yeah, we don't need these complex teams. We do own them, and, you know, just extra expenditure. We don't need that. Can they trim the rosters? You know, most major league roster, the major league roster is 26 players. In the minors, I think it's like 28 at AAA, 28 at AA, and 30 at high A and low A, and unlimited at the complex. Can they just say like, oh, we're going to put a hard stop on everything, and everything has to be 26 players like it is at the major league level, cutting a bunch of positions? Like, I feel that Major League Baseball is going to give very, very, what's the word? Petty.
They could. I could definitely see them trying to pull some shenanigans before this goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I think Eugene Friedman on Twitter made the point that part of this is them probably protecting the antitrust exemption that's been under fire recently for precisely this issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
that makes sense.
They do have a motive to, you know, quell this.
Yeah.
I mean, just never assume that MLB is going to do anything competent or well-intentioned, and you're going to mostly be correct.
How did Mr. Burns come in charge of everything? It just...
They're saying Boo Burns.
I don't really follow like any other sports. Do the commissioners of basketball like actively act against the interest of the sport or the league as a whole? You know, football. Like, I don't know.
Football is bad in different ways. Basketball is very different because the players have so much power.
Yeah, like the players are the game for basketball, yeah, really. Exactly. So, like, Adam Silver's not telling LeBron James anything, you know, it's just, that's just the fact of the matter. He has too much power, and he's an extreme example because he's LeBron, but there's plenty of other players who are like that, and they can kind of do what they want. But also, football's weird in terms of, like, they're bad in terms of, they act like they're good and they're not, in a way. Baseball is not, they're not shy about them being the evil overlords type thing, which is very strange to me. Like, baseball, they like openly accept baseball fans, like owners have kind of convinced fans to openly accept that it's okay to like not win and it's okay to just be really bad for a long time. Like, that shit doesn't fly in other sports either. And so that's kind of a symptom of how baseball owners are.
Ugh. Well, I mean, this is going to undoubtedly improve conditions for minor league players and make things better. So this is a win, big time win. I mean, hide it. It's a major win, you know, for these guys.
I'm honestly a little surprised that MLB didn't fight it harder.
Yeah, that's what makes me raise my eyebrow and say like, huh, they're just willingly. I mean, Ken raises a good point that, you know, they've been getting a lot of bad press lately, and, you know, there haven't been any serious governmental inquiries into things, but you do have more and more politicians, you know, highlighting the fact that Major League Baseball is an antitrust exemption and saying like, hey, you know, they shouldn't be acting like this. So, I mean, they're like, you know, like you said, there is reason to kind of appear nice and good here for their side, but it just isn't in character for them because they're evil and incompetent, you know?
Yes, very true.
But, yeah.
So, yeah, that is the big news of the week.
I'm very interested to see. I mean, obviously, we're going to pay close attention to this. I'm very interested to see where this goes because maybe I'm too jaded, but I don't expect good things to happen to baseball, right? Like,
It's really bad to be like, oh yes, suspicious. The owners didn't try to immediately stifle this, you know? Like that's really what it was. Like any other time I would read that and be like, oh look, a good thing these people are doing. But we've seen so much bad from them. It's like, oh, what is up your sleeve? What are you trying to pull? Mm-hmm. Even though everything that's come out of it has been, I think, mostly solid. Like I was kind of worried that it was going to be just one union and then minor league players would get marginalized in that, because at the end of the day, the major league players are going to care about major league things no matter how much they actually want to champion minor league issues. They're not there anymore. But there's a lot of good that's coming out of it, and it's just kind of worrying that we have to be like this. It sucks. It just sucks for the state of the game.
I mean, I'm also Mr. Pessimistic, so it's not exactly surprising, I suppose. I wonder if they were getting, like, behind the scenes, they were receiving a little bit more political pressure than we're maybe aware of, and that motivated some of this. But
I think that's definitely part of it, or the bulk of it.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders was making some angry calls to Rob Manfred.
And like a lot of like local politicians who, you know, lost teams at various points. And,
it's probably a good, it's such an easy PR win. So,
And there's an on-field win. This should have been done years ago.
Correct. I mean, when major leaguers unionized, there should have been provisions to do the same with minor leaguers. Unfortunately, it wasn't. And how long has the MLBPA existed? For basically like 50 years, 40 years?
I don't know, actually, off the top of my head. A long time.
Much longer than that.
When did the MLB...
I mean, I feel like it came into existence with the advent of free agency, but that might not actually be the case.
1966, so...
Okay, so you're close.
You were pretty close, 55 years, 56 years.
I mean, it should have been, you know, there should have been provisions 50 years ago, but...
Yes.
One correction, like, you know, one, at least it's being corrected now. Better 50 years later than never. One interesting thing is, obviously, this is something that minor league players, this is something we've discussed in the past as kind of like a good thing, but also a bad thing. And this definitely is in the interest of players. Obviously, better salaries is their number one concern, but something like working conditions is another one. And this is something that Major League Baseball did cite when they closed down, you know, 40 teams and two leagues in 2019/2020. And it is a legitimate issue. And it is also an issue from the player side of things, especially now with, you know, one of the proposed things that needed to be addressed that was mentioned. And you're seeing, you know, with more female umpires and female coaches, you know, separate dressing rooms for them, separate bathrooms for them, things like that. Those are definitely things that need to be addressed. And like we were talking about at the time when these things were brought up, like you have to wonder how this will impact teams that have, you know, older stadiums and historic stadiums, things like that. And, you know, this is something that is in the players' interests too now. Like you want you want better working conditions. You want a clubhouse that's more modern, or you want a clubhouse that, you know, doesn't flood, you know, basic things.
Don't tell that to the A's.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I'm generally not too sympathetic to those arguments. Yes, I know some of these ballparks are historic and whatever, whatever. But by most accounts, like going to like the actual experience of a lot of these older ballparks sucks for everyone. And that includes the major league ones like Fenway.
I've been to Fenway. I did not like it that much.
Yeah,
so.
Fenway and Wrigley are supposed to like both be pretty crummy. And I assume it's very much the same inside. And that's at the major league level. So how good are these historic minor league ballparks? They're going to be a piece. They're going to be garbage.
Yep.
Yeah, it's and you could renovate them like I would be cool if you kind of say, hey, we want to keep Wrigley around. I get it. I don't think you should tear Wrigley down or kick the Cubs out of it. But then you make it modern. Do that to it. Kick them out for a year or two and really, like, gut it and figure it out. Because, I mean, these stadiums are just too old, some of them.
Yeah.
And I'm only using the major league examples because, by my own admission, I've not been to a lot of minor league stadiums outside of the New York area. So,
I mean, for the most part, most of them are, I want to say, there's only a handful that are older than, you know, like 50, 60 years old, especially now with, you know, a lot of those more older and more historic teams either got sent to the chopping block or they kind of, you know, got moved or whatever the case. But there are very far, the real historic, you know, stadiums are far and few in between. Where that would be, where those kinds of things would be bigger issues.
Yeah.
But yeah, so minor leaguers will have some union protections, finally. Good stuff. All right, so if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complexqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Seipa. Lucas is at ElvaHost343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMedSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.